Well, we're all doing it, so we might as well talk about it. Aging, not just getting older, but getting older gracefully. How can we do it, and how can we do it well? We'll talk a little bit about mental health as we age here today and other factors that you may have come across in your own life and questions you may have about how you can get older gracefully. Join us. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today, and our guests are Dr. Art Walasek, the geriatric psychiatrist, the Associate Dean for Faculty Affairs and Development, and Professor of Psychiatry and Medicine at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Also joining us today, Jill Rankin, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Institute for Healthy Aging. Want to invite you to the conversation with your questions, your lived experiences, and how they might help others understand as they begin to get older. What do you want to know? And what stories do you have to share? 1-800-642-1234 is the number to join us. 1-800-642-1234 or email talk at WPR.org. Dr. Walasek, welcome back to WPR.
Thank you. Great to be back.
And Jill, welcome back to you.
Yes, thank you. Wonderful to be here.
Yeah, and Jill, I want to start with a little checklist that the Wisconsin Institute for Healthy Aging provides. And it's the Institute for Healthy Aging's 8 Dimensions of Wellness. Can you touch on those for us briefly?
Sure, yeah. So we know that there's multiple dimensions when we're thinking about our own personal health and our own personal wellness, and they all relate to each other. So it's not usually just one thing that we can do to make sure that we are living a well, high-quality life. So that's why we incorporate all 8 dimensions of wellness into our conversations. Just an overview of what those are. We have our physical health, which is what we think about most often when we think about our health, like, you know, exercising and eating right and sleeping, those kinds of things. We talk about emotional health. That's a pretty significant component, is one of the dimensions. Environmental health, how our surroundings affect us and how we contribute to the environment as well. Financial health is, you think about finances are an important part of life, but it's actually a dimension of wellness too. Then we have intellectual health and, you know, how we're learning in life and things like that. Occupational health, which is, and I can go into the details of these later, but occupational health is really like how we're contributing to the world around us and how we spend our time. Also social health and spiritual health all come into play there.
Physical health, environmental health, emotional health, financial health, intellectual health, occupational health, social health, and spiritual health. Dr. Art Walasek, with your geriatric psychiatry understanding, how do those things play into our quality of life as we age?
Well, this is a fantastic framework. I was furiously jotting notes as Jill was talking, because this is a brilliant way of thinking about it. And, you know, it's easy in healthcare for things to get really like broken down to little chunks of problems, but it's much more helpful to kind of step back and think about the big picture and the ways that all these different dimensions can affect our health and our well-being. So I love this approach. As a geriatric psychiatrist, I'm kind of most interested in the emotion health side of things, kind of things that we can do to help maintain healthy emotions like joy and hopefulness and optimism and good connections with other people. So that ties into social health. And then in my world, we also see a lot of folks who are having cognitive problems and perhaps even dementia. And so the intellectual health also jumped out as me. But these all interact with each other quite a bit to help determine how folks are doing.
Dr. Walasek, what's the best way to approach somebody to talk about how they're feeling or to inquire about their wellness? What's a good, solid approach that's safe to do?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And I would start with thinking about, you know, emotions are normal. So like we all experience a wide range of emotions, from happiness and joy to sadness and loss and grief when things don't go well, to anxiety and worry. There's certainly a lot of stressful things going on. And so emotions are a normal part of human life. Where we start to get worried that something more pathologic might be happening is if those emotions are leading to a lot of distress, mm-hmm. they're leading to problems with day-to-day life, or if they're even potentially leading to safety concerns, like things related to people saying that they don't want to be alive anymore and thinking about death and suicide. On that note, I should add, we've had the addition of the 988, a behavioral health crisis line, national number that launched a few years ago. Okay. That has been an extraordinarily helpful initiative. And rates of suicide in the U.S., which have been climbing for many years, have actually plateaued over the last couple of years. And it's not clear how much 988 has to do with that, but it may be a factor, a public health intervention that's been helpful. So in terms of approaches, I mean, I would ask, I think they're just sort of normalizing it as, hey, this is a thing that we talk about how we're feeling.
So how are you feeling?
How are you feeling?
How are you feeling? It's a tough question to ask because, you know, I think there's a lot of people who would rather not tell you straight up, but if you ask it point blank, it may be your best path to an answer. And Dr. Walasek, you mentioned the 988 number, and it's 3 years since its inception. NPR reports it's received more than 16 million calls, texts, and chats. And so if you or someone you know is struggling with their mental health, remember, help is always available, and it's all right to seek support, and you can do so at any time by reaching out to the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline by calling or texting 988 or chatting at 988lifeline.org. That's just 988 or online at 988lifeline.org. Jill Rankin, as I go through your eight tenets here of dimensions of wellness, I want to think that there are plenty of things in my life that I can't control, but as I go through physical health, environmental health, emotional health, financial health may be one that is not necessarily up to me, but I could do some things to help control it. A lot of these things seem to be within my purview to be able to control. Social health, spiritual health, things that I can do about it.
Absolutely. And also, too, it's sometimes when I'm talking about these dimensions, I like to preface it by saying it's not about doing everything perfectly, and we can't control everything, and we're not going to have a high level of wellness in all eight of these areas at every single point in our life. So really, it's about balance. And it's about kind of just assessing, like, hey, where am I at? And maybe I want to focus on my social wellness this month, and I will just want to, you know, engage with people that feel like something that I have more control over, and that will then feed into the other areas. So it's really not about perfecting and being perfect at every single area. And things change too with our lives. You know, sometimes different periods of our life, we're going to be stronger in some areas, and then different parts of our life will be stronger in different parts. And that's okay. And sometimes it can change from day to day. So really, less pressure and more opportunity is how I look at these dimensions.
That there's opportunity to take agency over your own life and to these degrees, but to sometimes there's not. And like I would say, the thing that comes to mind is, you know, chronic illness or chronic pain can be a thing that can get in the way of physical health, and it can begin to erode things like social health or emotional health, occupational health. And then what can you do about that?
Yeah, well, I would say, you know, there's so many options because you have all these different dimensions. So, for example, if you're dealing with chronic pain or something, a chronic condition, you know, there's support groups or wherever the other people, you know, find a different, maybe a different social circle than what you're currently involved with. And it's an opportunity to kind of reach out and go different directions. Maybe it's not even in your social circle, but maybe you're going to focus more on your emotional health. And you're going to do a lot more exploring and maybe journaling. There's so many things that we can do for our wellness that we do have control over, even when we're experiencing challenges in one dimension or another. So the list goes on. There's so much we can do. You know, I mean, I think of sometimes in my life, I don't even just as earlier in my life as a mother of young children, it was really hard to get, you know, physical activity in when you're constantly, you know, feeding children, taking care of children, all that kind of stuff. So maybe my social wellness at that time was a lot to do with like texting and writing letters to people, talking with people on the phone versus actually going out and seeing them. But that's something I had control over. So there is a whole lot that we can do and just be flexible within each of these areas and give ourselves grace.
Give yourself some grace. Everybody, I mean, you tend to be the hardest on yourself. Nobody's as hard as you as on you as you are most often. So, you know, give yourself some grace is just good advice. But Dr. Walasek, when is it time to talk to a healthcare profession about our mental health? Where would you draw that line? And I, you know, I think about this question and I feel immediately guilty that I'm somebody who's like, well, I've gotten away this long without having to talk to a therapist. I feel like I've gotten this far without it. I'll be fine moving along. But when is it time to stop and think about talking to a professional about mental health?
It's a great question. And I think any time where one's mental health or emotions are affecting the ability to do day-to-day life or causing significant distress or worry, that would be a good time to go get checked out. And really the first step would be to talk to one's primary care practitioner. So most mental health care in the United States is done in primary care. So that's a great first place to start. Primary care practitioners are trained to recognize and address depression and anxiety and other mental health issues. They may conduct a screening. So there are questionnaires that folks can answer about how severe their depression and anxiety are. There'll be medical concerns potentially to address. So medication sometimes can contribute to depression and anxiety. Alcohol and other drug use can contribute. Physical conditions. So Jill mentioned chronic pain. That's a classic example of something that can contribute to depression and anxiety. Mm-hmm. But there could be other medical conditions as well, like sleep apnea, where people have difficulty breathing at night and so on. So primary care is a great place to start because they can do a lot of that assessment of things that could be contributing to depression or anxiety. And then that practitioner may recommend some course of action that could include treatment for the depression and anxiety, and that could happen in primary care or perhaps a referral to mental health care.
Dr. Art Walasek, our guest, along with Jill Rankin. Jill's the executive director of the Wisconsin Institute for Healthy Aging, and Dr. Walasek, professor of psychiatry and medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, taking a look at aging gracefully and how you can go about it and how important your attitude towards it may be in terms of your outcomes of physical health and intellectual health, spiritual health. Where do you find healthy ways to live as you get older? What questions do you have about staying healthy as you age? 1-800-642-1234 is to join our conversation. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us, talk@WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and you're listening to The Larry Miller Show. The Larry Miller Show's next book club meeting is coming up. They'll be talking about The Business Trip by Jesse Garcia. The book is called The Business Trip, the author Jesse Garcia, and she'll be Larry's guest coming up Thursday, August 21st. Gives you plenty of time to still read this book about a thrilling novel that starts with two strangers meeting on a plane, and they'll take it from there. It's The Business Trip by Jesse Garcia coming up Thursday, August 21st, here on The Larry Miller Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today. And our guest, Jill Rankin, executive director of the Wisconsin Institute for Healthy Aging, and Dr. Art Walasek, associate dean for faculty affairs and development and professor of psychiatry and medicine at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. We invite you to the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. We're talking about aging gracefully and doing so well with a quality of life that maybe a younger you would not have thought would have been possible. 800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org. Got an email here from Stephanie who says she's witnessed firsthand the wonderful benefits of learning in retirement communities. She knows of two in Wisconsin, Osher in the greater Milwaukee area, and Plato, the participatory learning and teaching organization in the greater Madison area. She says both offer in-person, hybrid, and virtual opportunities to connect and learn with others. These learning and retirement communities, Stephanie says, provide affordable opportunities to continue lifelong learning, as well as wonderful opportunities to connect with other people, which supports emotional and social wellness. Checking all the boxes on the list there. And Jill, I know this is something that Wisconsin Institute for Healthy Aging focuses on.
Yeah, definitely. We encourage lifelong learning. We have so much to learn. So why not just dive in? So we do a whole lot of education on health. So I would always advocate for that. There's always something new up and coming with different health strategies that we can do to keep ourselves well. So there's definitely not a shortage of that. But really, and I know Art would probably agree with this, is that there's incredible benefits to learning something new, whether it's a new habit or it's a new topic. But we know that our brain develops new neural pathways as we learn, as we get older. So we have so much flexibility and so much opportunity as we age, and that does not end as we age.
But at the same time, there could be a social anxiety component to it. Learning new things sounds exhilarating, but meeting new people could be anxiety-inducing. Art Walasek, when it comes to that barrier to social health, what are the steps to overcoming it?
Well, first, I love that this idea was brought up. I regularly refer my patients to Plato for all the reasons that were so eloquently spelled out in that email message. There are going to be challenges. So there could be transportation problems if it's to an in-person event. There could be technological barriers for the virtual activities. And anxiety around meeting new people could certainly be a factor as well. The best treatment for that sort of anxiety, and just to use a technical term, is exposure. So the thing that you are afraid of, another way of saying it is to face your fear. So that that works. So if there's something that you are worried about or anxious about, actually trying and doing that thing and having a positive experience, like going to one of these groups, can really be a nice antidote to that sort of anxiety.
I love that idea. And so when it comes to that social connection, it's never too late to make friends. But I saw the news stories last week about the loneliness of young parents and isolation. And it made me wonder, in thinking about talking to both of you, how that changes as we age. Does it get easier once again once our children have left the nest? Or are there still challenges in finding those social connections and making new friends or acquaintances as we get older?
Yeah, I would say that there's more opportunity, I would say, as we get older, as we, figure out the different parts of our life that we like to participate in, different hobbies, different things that we like. We tend to gravitate towards some people who have similar interests. So if you live in a community where you have those opportunities, that's great. There's a lot of online opportunities as well. Now that we do things virtually, there's kind of any kind of club or anything you want to be a part of is there. So I would say opportunities are definitely there. However, I would also encourage people not to necessarily think about quantity, because sometimes it's not about quantity of contacts and quantity of in developing new relationships. Sometimes it's about quality. And every person has a different sense, a different threshold of what feels best to them. So even if it's just developing deeper relationships with people that you already know, that can increase your social connection and increase your wellness too.
This is anecdotal, but Dr. Walasek, I wanted to ask you about this. If there are lower barriers to entry using virtual access to organizations and events, if we've seen something from COVID that may suggest that we could reduce our anxiety by not physically participating, but dipping our toe in virtually. Is there something to be said for that?
Absolutely. So there's exposure and then there's sort of graded exposure. So you can do things in a piecemeal fashion and get closer to the thing that you want to do. So if participating in an activity virtually is a step towards perhaps a more in-person kind of participation, then that's great. So yeah, I completely agree. And you know, you can turn your camera off, you can end your interaction at any point. So it's a lot easier than to kind of get out of that experience if that becomes overwhelming. So absolutely, this has kind of created new opportunities for folks. On the other hand, people who have technological barriers, whether it's financial or physical, a lot of tech is not like super oriented towards older adults, like in terms of the size of things or accessibility and so on. So there can be some challenges that go along with the great opportunities of the technology.
Jill Rankin, from the point of view of the Wisconsin Institute for Healthy Aging, why are social connections so important for our overall health?
Well, they are incredibly important. And it's interesting that we are now in this space of elevating social connection as a public health issue. Yeah. So we do a whole lot of work in that. It's interesting to me because as a younger adult, I was educated on these dimensions of wellness and social wellness being one of them. But now we know that it has such a significant impact on our health that we know social connection social isolation and loneliness is actually a more of a risk factor for disease and poor health outcomes than smoking cigarettes, drinking alcohol in excess, having physical inactivity. All of those risk factors are certainly still risk factors for our health, but having that feeling of loneliness is actually worse than all of those factors combined. So that's why we at the Wisconsin Institute for Healthy Aging have elevated this as a priority topic area for us. Yeah. We have the Wisconsin Coalition for Social Connection, who is actively working on promoting best practices throughout the state and opportunities for adults as we age here in Wisconsin to be connected.
Dr. Walasek, is there a difference between loneliness and social isolation, and is one worse than the other?
I don't know the answer to that. Do you have a thought about that?
Sure. I can hop in here. So social isolation is an objective measure of how many contacts you have and how many people are around you. And kind of what I was saying before, a social connection is that feeling of being connected. So I could feel connected to one or two people in my life and still be socially isolated and be okay. Then there's other people who need a higher level of social of connections and not being isolated. They need to be around people to feel that connection. Yeah.
We are social animals, and that much becomes clear when your social health has as much of an impact as cigarettes or drinking. But the question that keeps popping to my mind is, how do we talk about this? And Dr. Walasek, what would you say to people who are struggling with loneliness to encourage them to talk about it? How do you pop out of that loneliness bubble you find yourself stuck in?
I find myself talking with folks a lot about meaning and purpose and kind of what keeps them going, what gets them out of bed each day, why do the things that they're doing each day, and trying to link addressing loneliness and isolation to that. So, you know, if something that gives me great purpose or joy is interacting with my children and grandchildren, for example, or other members of the community, or religious and spiritual activities, then to kind of help with that, promoting that sense of meaning and purpose, well, then we should probably figure out how to get you more active in those sorts of social activities to help with meaning and purpose. So I think that's how I would link and perhaps try to motivate people to get more active in their relationships with other folks.
And doctor, what role do you see therapy playing in fighting back loneliness and dealing with it, coping with it?
Yeah, outstanding question. So talk therapy or psychotherapy is effective in older adults, just as effective in older adults as it is in younger adults. Therapy is about learning. It's about learning new ways of seeing yourself, learning new techniques, new practices, new behaviors, new ways of engaging with other people. Jill was spot on in terms of the importance of learning as we get older. And so therapy is a form of learning. So when people develop depression or anxiety, and often isolation or loneliness or stress in relationships is a contributor to that, then therapy can help with that. And so there are specific types of therapy that have to do with relationships with others and addressing problems in those relationships or forming new relationships or finding meaning in those relationships. There's another kind of therapy that's all about do more stuff. The fancy term is behavioral activation, but it basically means let's just do more. And part of doing more is interacting more with others. So therapy is effective. It's safe. It's safer than medications. Therapy generally, except for bringing up some potentially difficult to talk about topics, is safe and well tolerated. So it's an important part of helping people who are suffering.
Do more stuff. I wrote that down. What a simple instruction to follow. Hey, try doing more stuff. See how that works for you. That's Dr. Art Walasek, Associate Dean for Faculty Affairs and Development and Professor of Psychiatry and Medicine at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Also joining us, Jill Rankin, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Institute for Healthy Aging. We invite you to the conversation as well with your questions or lived experiences at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email talk@wpr.org. And building on what Dr. Walasek said there, Jill, meaning and purpose isn't something I would necessarily pop out of bed in the morning and think about first. But how valuable is that thought process in considering meaning and purpose as you go about your daily life as you're getting older?
Yeah, I think that fits really well into the occupational dimension of wellness, as well as the spiritual too. I think that a lot of these things cross paths, but when we think about occupational wellness, it's, you know, how are we engaging with others and how are we engaging in our community, but in a meaningful way? So how are we contributing to our community and to our society at large? So whether that's volunteering or it's a career or it's, you know, some kind of contribution that you're making, maybe it's taking care of grandkids, you're being a caregiver of a loved one. I mean, those kinds of things will give you that sense of purpose. And I think it also bleeds into, like I said, that spiritual wellness also. People who have high senses of spiritual wellness, who have whether it's a strong faith or a strong connection to that outside creation, that they're knowing that they do have a purpose on this earth. And so whatever that is, it's individual for each person, but usually, and then it also bleeds into some social connection. When you feel like you feel a sense of belonging in a certain group, whether that's with a faith-based group or whether it's with your family or your coworkers or your volunteer friends, when you're part of that group, that gives you that sense of purpose also.
Dr. Walasek, what about as we get older, the concerns about substance abuse problems, alcohol and marijuana use? Where does this fit into the aging gracefully scenario?
I really appreciate that question. So I'll start with alcohol and then talk about cannabis after that. So the use of alcohol has really skyrocketed among older adults. A little bit of that was driven by the pandemic, but even before that, the rates were going up fairly dramatically. Alcohol is a nerve toxin. It kills brain cells. And so exposure to alcohol, really almost in any level, is potentially bad for the brain, which then means it's bad for emotions and for memory and for kind of everything else that we rely on our brains for. So it doesn't mean necessarily that you have to stop drinking at age 65, but it does mean that as you get older, you may not tolerate alcohol quite as much. So alcohol hits brain cells. Unfortunately, our brains are shrinking all the time. And so if there are fewer brain cells, alcohol has a greater effect. Our kidneys and liver change. So how we actually process alcohol changes. So our tolerance for alcohol goes down over time. And once you start developing other issues like high blood pressure, mm-hmm. Or memory problems or problems with balance and falls, alcohol is going to worsen all of those things potentially. And alcohol interacts with medications, and older adults take more and more medications potentially as they age. And so that can be an issue. And so, we really try to think about, well, what is the role of alcohol for you? Like, how valuable is that compared to some of these other health concerns? And how should we balance that? Maybe we should talk about reducing alcohol use a little bit so that you can do other things that are important to you, like walk without falling and have good memory and so on. There's a social aspect to drinking, so that gets a little bit tricky as well, you know, Friday night fish fries and all the other kind of rituals that we have. So that's important, and we don't want to get in the way of that.
Okay.
However, there are ways to enjoy that without necessarily drinking alcohol, for example. Cannabis is a little more complicated. We have less detailed there about the relationship with aging, but there are downsides to cannabis use, especially with respect to memory, motivation, energy, balance, those sorts of things. So again, for both of these, it's really about trying to balance, like, well, what if any good you're getting out of this with the potential downsides?
So that is that would be the scales. That's what you would ask yourself. Those would be the questions to ask is before you go for a drink or before you consume cannabis, is weighing the benefits versus what we know about the potential ill health effects.
Exactly.
Yeah. Which may not be an easy balance to make, is considering habits and how, you know, as we get older, some things just get ingrained. So Jill Rankin, I would be interested in knowing how we begin to break some habits, change our ways. The older we get, the harder it seems to be.
Yes, but we also can, like we said, we can learn at any age. So it's not even necessarily harder. I think it's just a matter of if you want to. So a lot of we have evidence-based programs that are centered around this. So we have plenty of opportunities if you go to our website at wihealthyaging.org, where we have plenty of programs that you can get into that embed developing new healthy habits within the content of the classes. So, and there's actually theory-based reasoning behind how we do these programs. But essentially, it comes down to making small short-term goals. So if you were to develop an action plan that said, you know, I want to get out and I want to start walking maybe 2 days a week, and you pick just very small steps where you're going to say, I'm going to go out on Friday morning for 10 minutes, and maybe I will go out on Saturday morning for 10 minutes. And you make a plan to do that, and you're confident that that can get done. Then once you're successful with that small short-term goal, you can build upon that. So it's really about building self-efficacy and confidence in ourselves. So if we build those small goals, then we're successful at them, then we'll keep doing it. But the key is you have to want to do it. So if you don't want to start walking, then I wouldn't pick that as your first goal. Pick something you want to do. You know, like I had a woman who in one of our classes wanted to clean out a bathroom drawer. So that was her goal, was to clean out the bathroom drawer this week. She was successful with it. And by the end of the 6 weeks that we were all meeting, she was walking because she had built up that confidence. So pick something you want to do, start working at it. And, you know, there's lots of potential there.
Well, now that you mention it, I have a kitchen drawer that could use some organizing.
Yeah.
Small goals and put it on the list. And Dr. Walasek, as we're looking, maybe take a step back and looking at the bigger picture here of how we can incorporate this in a way where we can do more stuff, we can find the joy and hopefulness and optimism in life. How important is our attitude to aging about how well we age? Is there a connection there?
It's very important. I think I'm going to introduce a word we haven't talked about yet, and that word is ageism, which is attitudes and behaviors related to ascribing certain things to a person being an older adult. And so, you know, some stereotypes about aging include, you can't learn new things, which is absolutely not true. And we brought that up over and over again. Or, well, of course, you're depressed, you're older. Also not true. Like, the vast majority of older adults do not have clinical depression, for example. And people have their own ageist attitudes about themselves. You know, you look in the mirror, you look different, you look like your parent or your grandparent. And that activates a whole set of thoughts of like, yes. Ugh, you know, I'm just getting older, I'm in pain, life is only going to get worse, et cetera, et cetera. So I think attitude is critical. And so having more positive and also realistic images of aging. So I think a lot about like the pictures that are out there of older adults. And so we can all sort of imagine, you know, say Grandpa Simpson from The Simpsons as a caricature of aging. The opposite doesn't help you though. Like a bunch of pictures of people like in their 70s skydiving, like that's cool, but that also isn't a realistic depiction of aging. And so kind of having a more positive, at the same time realistic and accepting picture of aging. So like, yep, my muscles don't work quite as well. I don't look exactly the same as I used to. That's life. I'm going to take it as it is and still do the things I want to do despite those changes.
Dr. Walasek, you just struck a chord inside me, and I have to giggle because it's not so much the external. What I'm familiar with it is of ageism is external ageism, is how the world sees you as getting older and maybe not as valuable. What I did not consider is internal ageism and how I see myself getting older and maybe less valuable. And using the phrase, oh, too old to whatever, does not necessarily apply. And if it does, it's only in your mind. You're not too old to start new habits. You're never too old to drop old ones or bad ones. That, you know, what you decide to do with your life is up to you until the very end of however you're going to live it.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess I hadn't thought of ageism as an internalized thing so much before as just external. And I do want to ask you about that, Jill, but we'll get to that in just a moment. And I want to invite everybody else to our conversation about growing old gracefully and how much that has to do with how you decide to go about it, how you decide to live it. It is your life after all. So what can you do about it as you get older? 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Tom and Madison, we'll get to you in a moment. Our guest, Jill Rankin, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Institute for Healthy Aging, and Dr. Art Walasek, Professor of Psychiatry and Medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today, and you're listening to The Larry Mueller Show. Well, we're all getting older, so we might as well talk about it and figure out a way that we can all do it a little bit better. That's what we're doing today on The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry and our guests, Jill Rankin, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Institute for Healthy Aging, and Dr. Art Walasek, Professor of Psychiatry and Medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. We invite you to the conversation as well at 1-800-642-1234, where Tom and Madison standing by. Good afternoon, Tom.
Hey, thanks for a great show. As an aging actor and musician, I really applaud this topic. And there are definitely mornings when you look in the mirror and you think it's you. And then there are mornings you look in the mirror and think it's Keith Richards. So it's I really get it. But also the small goals thing, I think, is hugely important. The best advice I ever got, and I wish I could remember who gave it, but they said, don't try to practice your instrument.
No!
And then if you...
Hold on, Tom. We lost the important meaning of life there. We got about the practice of instruments. What was that again?
I said some of the best advice I ever got, and I wish I could remember who gave it, was don't try to commit yourself to an hour of practicing a day, let's say on your guitar. Commit yourself to 10 minutes. And if you've got the guitar in your hand for 10 minutes, you'll probably end up playing an hour anyway.
Beautiful. I really appreciate that. The small goals, and they could become larger. It's interesting that you see Keith Richards when you look in the mirror. Why is it that I see my father? but yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And Jill, I imagine that is not an uncommon scenario for the Wisconsin Institute for Healthy Aging.
It is not. It's not. We know that there's actually research that shows if you have a positive view of aging that you live 7.5 years longer, but that's not really the important part. The important part is you have a higher quality of life.
Yeah.
So that's really, it's, you know, some of us, I was at a conference once and they asked us, you know, how many of you want to live to be 100? And maybe half the people raised their hand, but not everybody. So it really is about quality of life. It depends on your quality of life. So, but we know that when you have a positive view of aging, you tend to take care of yourself better. You tend to engage with others a little bit more. So it plays into all those dimensions of wellness just by our own attitudes.
I have a tough email here from Gloria, who emails to say she'd like her widowed father to move from his house to a senior living facility, but she's worried about the mental stress it could induce, and he might feel like moving is somehow surrendering his independence and acknowledging that his life is, well, approaching the end. Dr. Walasek, what can Gloria do about this?
What a very poignant question. And I think that that hits a lot of the issues that have to do with these sorts of transitions. So one of the more difficult transitions is when a person is facing difficulty living in their current situation and may benefit from living in another situation. One thought is sort of revisiting the current living situation, and could there be other things that could be done to help keep that person in that situation and have interactions with others and get the supports they need, whether it's some in-home caregiving or some scheduled activities outside of the house and so on. If that isn't possible or preferable, then a move to a setting like a senior living community or independent senior living or even assisted living, if there are needs, may be in the person's best interest, but that is going to activate all kinds of stuff around, am I losing my independence? I'm losing control over things of my life. I've got new routines to learn and new people to meet. So those could be challenges, and in the time leading up to it and the early part of the move, it could be a little more difficult. But the goal could be improvement over time, that because of being in an environment with other people and more opportunities to engage in others, the person will feel better. There may be additional supports in that setting, and so that'll help the person feel better. And so even though it will be stressful, I mean, it's a significant change in life, the hope would be that there's going to be a payoff on the other end in terms of better quality of life.
Appreciate that point of view. Let's go back to your questions and comments now for our guests, Jill Rankin from the Wisconsin Institute for Healthy Aging and Dr. Art Walasek from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Kate and Barneveld, good afternoon.
Hi, I apologize. I came to the conversation late, so forgive me if this perspective has already been shared. I feel like a really important way that we might combat both internal and external ageism is to surround ourselves throughout our lives with people of many generations, rather than, you know, like getting out of that age compartmentalizing bubble that we tend to live our lives in. I feel like I was surrounded my whole life, you know, from an early age on through today, with people who were older than I was, who still appeared vibrant and active and worthwhile. So I never had a sense of, you know, aging as being something negative, or that, you know, I hit the ripe old age of, you know, 40 or something and would suddenly cease to be relevant. And I'm finding that now in my early 50s that's really serving me well, because I don't see, you know, I don't see the end looming as such a big, dark, scary cloud. So I think, you know, going both directions, surrounding ourselves with people who are younger and older than us is really the best way to combat this. And I'll just listen off the air. Thank you for the conversation.
Well, thank you for adding to the conversation, Kate. And Jill, what do you think of surrounding yourself with people of all ages?
Absolutely. We all have so much to give to each other at all ages. We do a whole lot of intergenerational programming here in Wisconsin and nationwide. It's really gaining some traction. And even if it's not programming, just on your own individual, in your own individual sphere, we have so much to contribute at all ages. If you think about it, even with intergenerational relationships, that Kate was just saying, we can learn from each other. We can learn in not only just facts and figures, but what about perspectives? And that really then feeds into social connection too. So as you're increasing your social connection and that sense of loneliness is dissipating, you're also increasing other parts of your health. So it's all connected.
It's funny how it's all connected when you stop to think about it, and how, you know, how you approach it can have a great degree of effect on the outcomes. We talked a little bit about chronic pain and how that can affect all the other aspects of health as you age. I want to ask about chronic cognitive problems, which also can become an issue as we get older. And Dr. Walasek, how do we deal with these in a way that protects our overall mental well-being?
Thank you so much for addressing that. So first off, unfortunately, with aging does come change in our cognition. Our memory is not as good over time. Some of our reasoning and other kind of cognitive skills can change over time. That being said, as we've kind of already talked about earlier with learning, you know more as you get older. So knowledge and potentially wisdom all can increase over time. There's actually some interesting literature about attention actually gets better over time, up to about your mid-70s or so. So some things get worse, some things get better. Where we start to worry is if people develop memory or other brain changes that are worse than what we'd expect for their age, or if those things are affecting day-to-day life. And like things that pop up early on are driving difficulties. So people get lost driving or get into accidents. There could be a lot of reasons for that, but memory loss could be one of them. And then money management, that's often an early signal that someone is starting to have trouble cognitively. Oh. So if that happens, then that would require, we'd strongly recommend some medical attention and evaluation. And again, that would start in primary care with getting a good history of what's going on, thinking about medical conditions that might be contributing to memory loss, thinking about medications, alcohol, cannabis, other things that could be contributing to memory loss, addressing those. And then perhaps kind of further evaluation of the possibility of another cause of memory loss, like stroke or Alzheimer's disease or Parkinson's or other conditions. So that's kind of the stepwise way that we would think about addressing memory loss.
And Jill, how does the Wisconsin Institute for Healthy Aging help people challenged with memory loss and cognitive decline?
Sure. Overall, we don't usually focus on just one population. So we provide a variety of different opportunities for people with all different challenges and all different opportunities and strengths. So I would say, you know, we have evidence-based health promotion programs that one can engage with. I think of, you know, our fall prevention work. We have a lot of information on how memory affects falls and fall risk. So encourage you to, if that's something, that you're experiencing, we have lots of information on our Falls Free Wisconsin website, which is directly linked from ours, that you can just, you know, questions to ask your doctor, things that you might want to think about with home safety to make sure that as you're dealing with memory loss, what are some things that you can put into place to keep yourself safe? So things to think of with fall prevention is the biggest one. But overall, like I said, evidence-based programming that, you know, oversees our Living Well with Chronic Conditions program really addresses any kind of chronic condition, whether that is memory loss or that's anything else you're dealing with. And, you know, making those small goals, having caregivers involved in that is a big deal. And they're always invited to those kinds of programs. So we include caregivers in a lot of our work as well. So the more the merrier, I would say, is engage in health education and bring your family and your friends.
That website, again, for the Wisconsin Institute for Healthy Aging is wihealthyaging.org. That's wihealthyaging.org. And you'll find an abundant amount of resources there waiting for you at any time, or for others who may be looking for help as well. Please pass that along. And Jill and Dr. Walasek, I want to thank you both for a wonderful hour. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Jill Rankin is the executive director of the Wisconsin Institute for Healthy Aging, and Dr. Art Walasek, professor of psychiatry and medicine at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. I also want to thank our team today for making it all possible, our producers Clara Neipert, Joel Patenaud, our technical director Jeff Robbins, and our executive producer is Jill Nadeau. I'm Lee Rayburn, in for Larry Mueller today. Join us for Garden Talk tomorrow from 11 to 1 here on The Larry Mueller Show. Melinda Myers returns. I'm Lee Rayburn, and this is The Larry Mueller Show on WPR News.